This is our third session in the series this week on the church as hospitality community, and today I wanted us to look at blessed by the stranger, not blessed be the stranger, but blessed by the stranger. In the first session, we looked at what does it mean to welcome the people who come to our churches, and in the second session, what does it mean to not just welcome them, but to actively seek those people? This time, what I thought would be helpful is if we were to talk about congregations and how do we actually look at the people that come as gifts and with gifts that they can bring into our congregations. So, to do that, I would first like to tell you my favorite new member story. In one of our calls, Gary and I have shared each of the calls that we have had in ministry. And in one of our calls, it was my part of our job description to take care of reaching out to people and doing the new member program. And so, this was my favorite new member story that I always love to tell to the new member groups that came in. Now, imagine we're in Europe, and back in peasant days, and there's this tiny little European village, and they have no church. No church. It's a very, very, very poor village. And they would like very much to have a place of worship, but they cannot afford it. So, finally, the one wealthy person in town said, I will build us, not a church, but a cathedral, under one condition. And that condition is that I will decide everything about how this is going to be built. Well, the villagers met and agreed to take this person up on the offer. So, the building began. And the villagers, of course, didn't have a voice in what was going up, but they watched intently. And they would scratch their chins, and they would kind of go, I wonder if he knows what he's doing. I'll bet he didn't think of such and such, you know. And although they were happy that this cathedral was being built, they had their doubts on the fact that they'd been silenced from any participation. Well, it was getting close to completion, and the date was scheduled for the time when they would all get to come through and see just what was built, because up to this point it had been a real hands-off thing. And then the speculation really got fierce, and they were sort of making their mental lists about, I wonder if he remembered to do this, and I wonder if he thought of that, and so on. So, the day came, and you can bet the village was hyped for getting inside this thing. And they walked in, and this cathedral was incredible. Far beyond their wildest dreams of what he might have built. And as they walked through, it was just amazing to them, all the different things that he had thought of and the thoughtful little touches that he had made and so forth. And then as they were all finally gathered in the actual worship space, somebody said, it with that real gotcha tone of voice, there's no lights in here. And they looked up, and sure enough, there were no fixtures, there was no lighting in this room, and it was really kind of dark. And they thought, that's what he forgot. And then he said, just a minute. And he went in back, and armload after armload, he carried out lanterns. And he handed a lantern to every villager. And then he showed them, and all throughout this cathedral were little tiny pegs for these lanterns to be hung on. And he told the villagers, When you come to worship, you bring your lantern and you hang it on your peg. And if you are absent from worship, the light in here will be that much dimmer. We need all of you to be here to bring your light for this cathedral to really be lit up in worship of God. Well, the parallels are obvious for a new member class, that when somebody joins our congregations, that they bring a light, maybe just the beginnings of a light, maybe already quite a fanned flame of light, but they bring the light of Christ in their heart in some respect or another. And as soon as they join our communities, we are diminished when they are not there, when they don't bring their light. Today I'd like to, for us, and especially because we can have some conversation here, to really talk about that business of how do we allow those lights of Christ in the hearts of people to be fanned, to grow, to flourish, to have an opportunity to be cast around so the whole community is brighter because of these people who come. The basic question then is, what is God calling us to do or to be for new people as they come into our congregations? The first thing that I would like to identify, and at any time in our conversation here, please jump in. But the first thing I'd like to identify is a text that I think fits a reading from the Bible, and that's Ephesians 4, verses 15 and 16. Ephesians 4, 15 and 16. Speaking the truth in love, we must grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by every ligament with which it is equipped, as each part is working properly, promotes the body's growth in building itself up in love. Now, we just switched images, obviously, from light imagery to body ligament imagery. But the image here, again, is that when each part is working properly, each part helps promote the body's growth and in building itself up in love. Beautiful image for who we are, a real organic image here of the body of Christ. One thing I think that I feel that is helpful for church people to recognize right off the bat in a conversation like this is what I like to call the squatter's rights disease that prevails in many of our congregations. Or some people call it in reference to the prodigal son or prodigal father parable, however you choose to refer to that particular story. A lot of people call it the older brother syndrome, where there's a sense of who are these people that are coming and what right do they have. Let me show you a little chart that I think is helpful and which I think is common in our churches. If we were to draw a great big circle to represent our churches, great. Okay. There are, and try this out, it's defined differently for all congregations, but there are usually the people here that we could call the inside insiders, and they're the tiny circle on the inside of the whole congregation. And then there is a little bit bigger circle called the outside insiders. And then there are the outsiders. Now, keep in mind, this whole thing is the congregation. Okay, so we're not talking about people who aren't members, we're talking about the whole congregation. So we have this tight circle of inside insiders, and then a little larger circle of outside insiders, and then the outsiders on the perimeter. When we were in one of our congregations, there was a particular family that Gary and I had been meeting with a long time, a poor family from the community. And after much prayer and deliberation, this family did decide to join this particular congregation. And so we had a new member Sunday. And it was a rural congregation, and this didn't happen very often, that newcomers came who weren't joining by marriage. So, we had this celebration in worship, and then in the narthex, after worship, in quite clear earshot of these new people who had just joined the church, one of the church pillars, one of the inside insiders, said to Gary, "Well, Pastor, hope these people know they gotta pull their weight. Like the rest of us, this isn't a free lunch here, you know." And he wasn't talking to Gary, I can assure you. He was sending what he wanted to say to that that family that was standing in earshot. We are currently in the enterprise of developing this new congregation called People of Hope, as it says on my t-shirt, and I was absolutely thrown off guard, flabbergasted, to discover about 6 months into that mission developing that we already had this going on. And it showed up this way. We were sitting around a planning table of the launch team, right? A launch team that was trying to decide how we could possibly plant this new congregation that would truly be welcoming to people who had, for whatever reason, chosen previously to not be part of a church. And week after week, we would talk about how can we reach out, how can we be welcoming, what language should we use, and so forth. Finally, one of the people on the launch team said, "I am getting sick and tired of just hearing about what are we going to do for those newcomers. What about those of us who are helping get this church started, who have been in the church all along and don't have to worry about all that stuff? We understand the words. We know the stories. What's going to feed us? What is there for us?" It was already in the infancy of this congregation clear that there were inside insiders who perceived that the people that would be reached, that we'd be reaching out to, would be the outsiders, and this person was already sick and tired of hearing about it. So there are a couple things we could say, but every church has to define this differently according to what you see. But those inside insiders, they're usually the real power brokers. They're the ones that, whether they sit on the church council or not, their vote counts more than anybody else's. They're the ones that, they're the E.F. Huttons, that when they speak, everybody listens. The people who are considered to be in the know, the people whose perspective can silence a whole room, even though a few people might call the pastor up later and say, "You know, I really disagreed with her." They're the people who will maybe find themselves on council at the strategic points in the congregation's life, when they know that at this point it's going to be important, a vote about a building or a vote about a new staff person or whatever. There are all kinds of ways every church might be able to identify, but I have to say that even at just celebrating our third birthday, we've got people like that in every church, and we have them among People of Hope, the Inside Insiders. The outside insiders are people who, they might be on council, they might have positions of leadership, but they don't carry the same power, and their voice isn't carried in the same way through the congregation. And then, of course, you have the outsiders that you can say five different ways on 10 consecutive Sundays that everyone is invited to such and such an event, and they won't come because they really feel it's probably for the outside insiders and the inside insiders. Everybody to them means the people in the know. So that's commonly the way things work in our congregations. Here's a confession. I experienced this within myself here at Holden. This is our fourth visit here. I know many of you have probably been here more often than that, but not this time, but the last time we came, on Sunday night, we got here on a Saturday, I think. On Sunday night, a whole new group of folks stood up and were being welcomed new into the village. And I found myself giving lip service to the welcome, but thinking, I've been here a day already. And then when I'd been there here 4 days and the new people came and we welcomed them and so forth, I found myself thinking, they're just newcomers. I've already been to Heart Lake. I've already got my weaving on the loom. I've already got my loom. Had to wait in line for that. I've got a sense of what's going on in this community. I've already signed up for the lapidary. I'm set, they're new. odd thing to experience in yourself, especially in a place like this, but I remember kind of feeling that almost superiority. And then, of course, you find out that the people who just came lived here for 3 years, a year and a half ago. It kind of takes the wind out of your sails. But there's that tendency, I think, to think for this squatter's rights disease to show up whenever we're talking community. And I suspect that it happens a lot. I know it happens a lot in our congregations. Thoughts, comments, observations that you have about that? Yeah.
We've lived everywhere. We're in the military, and we've moved 29 times in 28 years, and we've gone to all kinds of congregations. This is in every congregation, but there's a difference. In some congregations, our practice is to come to a community, we join the closest Lutheran church to our house. That's it. We don't shop around, we don't do anything else, because they're not all the same, but I mean, we just join the closest one, because then you've got to go. It's there. You're not jumping across town. And what we found is that some churches, and you can tell from the first time you come, you walk in, and yeah, there's outsider, insider, outsider, but some are open. And you as an outsider can tell from the first time you walk in that you can move in and out. But you come into some congregations. We were in the city of Chicago. We visited 5 congregations because we were shut out, that it was so cold. When we came in, it was frozen. There was no way, and there was no way for us who just showed up to move in and out. We're the same people. But, you know, we had a great deal of difficulty. So I don't think that it's, I think we should understand that this happens and just try to flow through.
Can we create little entry points, or can we make these lines more fluid so that there really are bridges or gates?
I think that's going to exist as well. In every congregation, it's really the way things get done. I mean,
yeah.
If you don't have that structure, and there's all these people that say, well, I'll volunteer, I'll help, but I don't want to be chairman.
Yeah, right.
And you know, how many people like that do you know? And it's always the same people who say, oh, yeah, well, fine, I'll do that. I'll be chairman of stewardship. I'll be chairman of, you know. And a lot of people say, well, I'll help you, but I don't want to be German.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How do you provide care and nurture for the inside insiders at the same time as you're trying to assimilate these newer people coming in, when they're trying to break in, and that's threatening to the people that are already there?
It should not be. Yeah, that's the issue right there. It should not be threatening at all. No. That is your goal.
It's a challenge.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing I think is helpful is, what if we were to receive new members on a spiritual level first in our congregations? What I mean by that is, what if we were to recognize that the reason somebody joins the church is that there is something stirring in them spiritually? The year that we were on sabbatical, we joined a church in our community for just that year before we were to begin worshiping as people of hope. And I was really amazed. The pastor who led this new member orientation time had everybody in the room go around and just say one significant thing that happened in your life in the last year. And it was phenomenal. Birth, death, new job, loss of job, new home, all those things that are on those charts, you know, that talk about that if you have four of these, you're majorly stressed in your life, you know. To a person, everybody that was joining could say in the last year, something major happened in our life. It wasn't like somebody just woke up one day and said, join a church. There's usually a precipitating factor, and in the graciousness of God, God stirs people through those circumstances to maybe look Godward, and then that's often when they come to our churches. There is a myth out there, I think. See if you've felt this. There's a myth out there that I've even heard church analysts talk about this, that if new people with enormous needs come into your church, that they're going to take more than they give, that they're going to sap energy out of pastoral time, youth director time, or whatever, and that then they'll be able to give back. I say it's a myth, because among people of hope, I've seen it to be a myth. But what that myth does is, of course, make us gravitate toward the people coming in that look like everything's fine, healthy, family's intact, and so forth, and make us a little more leery of the people who look like they are troubled or bring problems with them. Just one example, there's one young mother in our worshiping community that she and her family had worshipped kind of sporadically, and then there was a complication with a pregnancy, and she lost a baby. And she came to me, and we talked about that a lot. It was a painful, painful experience for her. In the course of her working through and needing enormous healing from God about that, she just turned into this incredible person of energy with all kinds of hope and vision for what this community could be. And I'm looking now at some of the contributions she's making, and I'm going, whoa, who would have thought that while offering her healing, she would bring back a hundredfold to this community because she'd experienced this God of grace. And people say your best missionaries in your congregation are your new members, because if they've discovered they've found something here, they're going to go out and tell somebody else, hey, you'll never believe this church that I just found. So what do you think happens? What do you think? That's one of the ways to go at this. What do you think happens if we begin to look at these people not as outsiders coming in, but as people that there's something really stirring in these people's lives. And how can we as a congregation listen to that, tap into that? To me, I think it means a fundamental shift in how we receive, welcome, and assimilate new members.
I think it has to do also with, you know, how the insiders behave, because I think once you get in the inside, people are asking you to do this stuff, you can do all of it. You know, even on the council and in the choir, president of the congregation, all this stuff. And you're kind of just, I mean, you can keep doing it. You're doing different things, you're kind of moving around within that group. But I think it really helps to just finally say, okay, I'm going to take a vacation from doing all this and get somebody else to do it. Because most of the people will let you do it if you keep doing it.
Yeah.
And until you finally say, I'm just going to take a vacation from this, and let these people who have maybe different gifts, but certainly gifts, let them do it. I mean, because it's sometimes hard to do, and you think, you know, particularly if you're sort of a control person, which I tend to be, you know, it's hard to step back and say, well, let somebody else run with it. But it's great if you do, because then all of a sudden these people are growing and doing all kinds of great stuff, and you break through those kinds of walls. And frankly, once you stop, I mean, if you're talking about insiders being people who are doing a lot of the things in terms of management of the congregation, etc., if you stop doing that and just kind of stand on the sideline a little bit, it's a lot easier then to be looking at some of the other folks that are coming in, because you don't have to worry so much about doing all this stuff. You can be doing what you ought to be doing, which is not talking to everybody about, well, we're going to have this meeting and that meeting. You talk to new people that come in, just, you know, share with them.
Yeah.
And it,
to be less occupied, that means you're more open to,
oh, yeah,
to more of that that could be done.
Yeah. The congregation that we assimilated in the fastest, that made us immediate, no longer outsiders, on the day we joined the church, we received a key to the front door. Every person who joined the church, and everybody who knows what that means, a key to the front, the key.
A real church key, not one of those.
A key that opened the front door anytime you wanted it. Do you know, we didn't want to take it. Hey, the person who's got the key, no. You know, a key on the day you joined the church. I mean, already we're there. We haven't signed our pledge card. We haven't done a doggone thing, and we've got a key. Because it's our home too. I mean, there's no outsiders in the congregation when you got the key.
Yeah.
That was a powerful.
Did it work?
Did
it work?
Key work?
Yeah, like a real key.
Did it work?
Yeah.
Oh, did it work? Yeah. I don't know. I don't think we ever used it.
Well, once or twice.
But we had it. And we were, can you imagine? Because you all know what that would be like.
Did they ever tell the insurance company that
was? I don't think they care. But we never felt like an outsider. And
that's,
it turned out that this church was a Missouri church, and we didn't even know. We just joined. We said, oh gosh, you know. And coming from St. Louis, you know what they're used to. I mean, it was
but
just.
This was out in Washington, D.C., and
we
it
were
was
immediate
seven
insiders. We were already on the inside.
It was like an ELCA. I think the Seminex Missouri Synod eventually joined the ELCA. Did they not?
Yes.
Yeah. It was the AELC, which then became part of the ELCA. Right.
But that just blew us away, because we already, you know.
You were that. You zoomed right to the inside.
We were zooming.
Well, in our small congregation in downtown or near downtown Seattle, we've experienced kind of a somewhat the opposite of losing some of these inside members. We haven't had many of the outsiders. It's sort of reversed there, that the insiders are the big percentage, and the outside insiders is very small, and the outsiders is very small, because practically everyone there is really involved and active in so many things, and but then the problem gets to be that they get burned out, and there's just too much of activity, and so they feel like they need to kind of go apart and rest a while.
But then there's so not then
they,
much.
They don't feel that they can just go to the outside edge of the congregation there, so then they leave and to join another church.
Did I hear you right? Is it more like this?
Yeah.
Yes. And then that means that there is not another group to to invite into that activity.
No, and there aren't enough people to go around for all the different jobs and positions or things that there isn't then.
We come from a large congregation that it's gotten larger over the last 10, 15 years. It's gotten really huge, and we have four pastors, and we've found a real problem in that when you have a smaller congregation, it's easier to get to individual families and to know what's going on, and when it gets huge, even if you've got deacons and that sort of thing, it's hard to know where everybody is, and you lose people. So they've really focused on small groups, and they tell new members all the time, you know, you're going to be a stranger until you get into small groups. You've got to find a core that you're going to identify with, a group that you can say good morning to when you come in, that you know and you associate with them. And that's worked well for us, except we have a few Bible study groups. They've set a limit, and they've said they want these groups to not be much bigger than a dozen people, because they feel that otherwise they lose that closeness that they're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend who was going to one of these Bible groups and really enjoying it, but she was the 12th person, and so she wanted to bring two or three of her other friends, and the lady that was the hostess said, you know, we don't want to go above 12. But they could go to some other Bible group, you know, because there are a lot of them, and some of them don't have 12. Well, of course, these ladies didn't want to go to the other Bible group. They wanted to be with their friend. That was
part of the draw. Yeah.
So there was a lot of controversy about that. And
they could stretch a little and then divide.
Yeah. And that's what my friend felt, is that they
go to 16 and then divide.
And then divide, or whatever. But that is kind of inherent in it. And probably one Bible study hostess would have handled it really graciously, where another one didn't have those people skills. It's more structured.
Yeah.
But it's we want to grow, we want to bring people in. But then as we grow, that brings in new problems, too.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're absolutely right. I think small group ministry is the key. And in fact, tomorrow, that's what I'd like us to spend some time talking about. With small groups, you can put as much as this will apply, because people are who we are and we group ourselves. There is another whole model that invites us to see the church all differently when small groups is its emphasis. And that's what I'd like us to look at some more tomorrow. In your church, think about what are the things that are done concretely, like the key, to bring the new members into active participation in the congregation. When I was the new member pastor of this one church, it was about 4,500 people, and so it was that same issue of how do you get people involved. A common thing in that church, and in many, many churches I know, is when people come in, to give them the time and talent survey that you used last fall. And one of the problems, of course, is that lots of the people who signed up last fall haven't been called yet. I mean, that is often what we hear from congregations, that people go, oh, I signed up to be an usher, no one ever called me. So then you add a whole new raft of people who will have that unwelcoming experience of signing their name to be willing to do something. And what sends, what kind of message does that send when they don't get a return phone call about that? It's like a no thank you. But that's one of the things that often happens. And that makes me wonder, are we really in our churches structured for growth? Are we really structured for growth? Another thing that I've seen and did, again, confession, is when these new people would come into this huge congregation, among the many things that we would hand them in the packet was a constitution. No, really. There's probably 1% of them that read that. A list and a chart of how the congregation was structured, and by that it meant the council and the pastors, and it all fits together like this. And then the list of committees. And often you tell people, and if y'all want to get involved, call the head of one of these committees. Researchers tell us about, I think that I'm not good at remembering statistics, but 7 or 8% of people's personality profile is such that they just love committee work. Only about 7 or 8% of people really thrive on being placed on a committee. That leaves a whole huge number of people where to get a list of committees, it sounds like, gosh, I do that all day long, and then if I want to get involved in my church, this is my option. Or another thing we often do, let's say that one of the most well-known, prestigious accountants decides to join our churches. What are we likely to ask her to do?
Treasurer
or count money after services? Where, you know, the business of running the church could gain so much from the expertise of somebody whose field is that accounting business. And we often ask them to keep our books or count the envelopes and tally it up after church on Sunday. But I really wonder, what are some ways that we can more successfully create entry points that really grow out of the gifts that somebody brings, that grows out of this, of a radical belief that for this congregation to now work properly, for this congregation to let the light of each person shine brightly, that we have to hear from and cherish and build from the gifts that this person brings, even if they come limping in emotionally or spiritually.
We have the talent and interest thing, you know, but it's sort of vague. I mean, it's like, do you like music? Do you sing? Do you play an instrument? Do you like children? Are you and you fill this out and you hand it in. But then those committees, as they have things come up, the committees call the people. So if I have on my sheet that I like gardening and I like working with children, a copy of my interest form is given to the head of each of those departments. Mm-hmm. And when mm-hmm. they have something, they go through their things.
So you don't feel like you signed up for a committee and you're not disappointed when you're not called?
No, because they call me when they want something. And if I want to do it, I do. And if I don't want to, I say, well, call me again.
That's a nice idea.
So, and it gives the committee heads, it gives them a group of people that they know are interested in what they're doing.
Yes.
You know, which is invaluable. I mean, if I've signed up and said I like to make cookies and somebody calls, hey, you want to make cookies? Sure, I do. You know.
That's what I said. Yeah.
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 It seems to me that growing pains is one of the related issues here. If we are really going to be blessed by the stranger that's coming in, then we need to add new pegs for each new lantern. And how do we add new pegs? Well, sometimes we might need to build a completely different structure for adding new pigs. I remember when my last, we have three children, I remember when Jake, our youngest, got his first tooth. And I kind of thought, oh, this is my last little child and that little gummy smile is gone now. and I remember when each of the kids took their first step and there is sort of a grief about, oh, there goes that crawling little baby. You know, we're out of that stage already, and now this kid's going to be toddling around. Or, you know, first day of school, or on and on and on. Those firsts, there's always a little bit of grief, and then you have to kind of go, well, wait a minute, what are the alternatives? Do you want the kid to not grow up? These are growing pains that I think churches go through when we have to talk about adding more pigs. And it gets particularly tough when the new population, the new family, the new person coming in is different in some way. There's a woman in our area, not in our congregation, who has an avid interest in bringing the children of migrant farm workers to her church worship services. And she brings as many as her car will hold. And she's connected with quite a number of families. In Minnesota, there are quite a few people who come up from Mexico and work. And she has connected herself to these people and brings their children to worship. And I met her at a church event, and we were talking about this, and I was so excited that she had taken this mission on. But there was a sullenness about her, and finally, the more we got to visit and the more she talked, she said, well, you know, I get hate mail about it. I get letters, anonymous letters from somebody in the congregation, and I don't know who, obviously, that's telling me to stop bringing that kind into our congregation. And that if I keep doing that, before you know it, we're gonna have people like that joining. And we don't want their kind in our family, is the message that she got. That was pretty overt. But I suspect that all of our congregations struggle with those growing pains. How will we be different if these people come in with who they are and what we do? And it's a tough issue for every growing church. And it might be fun to see if you've seen that, experienced that, or maybe even seen neat ways to overcome that. Because it's one of the growing pains that many, many churches experience.
How did you handle it? Did you speak about it from the pulpit?
Well, see, it wasn't in my congregation. And it was just sort of a friend-to-friend kind of conversation. And I just turned her to the scriptures, to the Great Commission, to how we need to be strong in our own calling, and that this gospel is, this, she's bringing them to God's house. That's really, to me, often the bottom line question. Whose house is this? It's God's house that she's bringing them to. And the ramifications are that somebody else really looks at it as much as theirs as God's.
Well, sometimes I think that the mission of the church is being sabotaged by people who have been within the church for a long time, mm-hmm. and they're tolerated because they are this insiders. And those who have some moral authority, like ministers, hesitate to speak out right from the pulpit and say, we are aware that this is going on, and this should not be happening in God's church. Now, even if somebody gets up right then and walks out, so often, sometimes the impression is given that ministers fear for their jobs, and so they almost tolerate some of this kind of thing. It's almost like we're all in a boat, and here's somebody that's chopping at one end, holes in the bottom of the boat, while the rest of us are repairing it at the other end. They've been here a long time, so we don't dare tell them to stop doing that.
Yes.
Also, they make large contributions sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Often. Mm-hmm. Often, you'll see a lot of dollar signs in those inside insiders.
Mm-hmm. There's about a year and a half ago at People of Hope, there was a family that was thinking about joining, and at the same time, there were quite a few other families that were thinking about joining, you know, sort of in that in-between stage. And many of them, the ones that were thinking about joining, were lower income and not married, single mothers. But this one couple that was very much upper income decided that we were too liberal at People of Hope. And Gation, who was in an in-crowd, came up to me and said, we need to listen to those people that are leaving, this upper-income couple. And I said, because? And then his response is, because they're fine, upstanding citizens. And I just got a chill down my spine when I heard him say, that, because I don't know what he was trying to say. Was it an ethnic thing he was saying, or a financial thing, or that they were married and not divorced?
They were somehow more valuable.
It reminded me of James, where James talks of, in the Bible, talks about people taking partiality, inviting the rich people up and telling the poor people to go sit over there. And it's the bottom line of it is, of course, we didn't change our theology or anything a bit. That couple left, and so did the president of the congregation and his family left. And we were scared. You know, especially in a small congregation, to have families like that up and leave. I suppose we might be called courageous, but because we didn't change or anything, but we were scared.
The question, though, Gary, is why did he choose to do that? You know, if you came to worship in the community in the first place, what made him choose another route? You know, the president and that other person, it would be interesting to find out in their mind, and they're making the choice. I assume the other people continue to be members.
Yes. And continue to join.
So they were making a choice, really, yes, right, rather than...
Yes.
Did
you ask a question?
Yeah, I guess it was, what was your belief in why they chose to leave?
I think it was ultimately over the fact that we would not come out and say homosexuality was wrong. I think that was their biggest issue. And that was the president, but somehow that whole business of fine upstanding citizen, and maybe that was part of it too. I'm confused about it, I guess.
And maybe that's our perception, really, of what they were saying, by saying we need to listen to these fine, upstanding people. It was not necessarily that they were saying that the other people were not fine, upstanding people. I mean, that would be for you to interpret, and maybe you knew by history that was what they meant. But maybe that was not what they meant. Uh-huh. What they meant was we should listen to both. I mean, you know, maybe there are two voices here, and...
I had a conversation with Susan Brill this afternoon, and we talked about insiders, outside insiders, and outsiders. I told her I sense a change in Holden over the years, whereby what some people would call fine, upstanding people are really maybe starting to be the outsiders. And if you look at the list of people that are doing classes and the classes themselves and maybe even the attendance of the classes, it's almost, you're inside to be, I mean, we're so inclusive that we're exclusive in a way, in that we're focusing. I mean, we went down and tried to find a stewardship book in the library, and we couldn't find one. I mean, we found a whole rack of women's issues, we found a whole rack of sexually oriented topics, etc. And sort of what I would think to be some of the standard kinds of things I would expect to find in the bookstore here weren't here. And Susan was quick to point out, took me to the board and said, well, look at all these folks that are on faculty, and these are the various things that are presented, etc. And I said, well, maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe it's just my perception. Mm-hmm. But I came last summer and I had that perception. I mean, I'd been coming here for a long time. I didn't come for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And it was just a perception of, you know, I talked to a few other people that have that perception but aren't as vocal as I am. And I think it's not, it's maybe not a fair perception on my part, but it's something that that I sensed, frankly. And I think that when you say you need to listen to people, you need to listen to all sorts of people. Yeah. By no means am I saying that we ought not to examine some of the issues that are being examined here, and who am I to say these people are right or wrong or whatever else. On the other hand, you know, I think there's a lot of people that would like a whole range of opportunities, which is why I came mm-hmm. to this, and I came to Bible mm-hmm. study this morning. Mm-hmm. So there are a range of opportunities, but it's almost like there's a shift in what who's on the inside, who's on the outside,
mm-hmm.
at least here.
I can't.
There's a feeling that everybody else believes the same way. That there's a, that you're the outsider if you differ on. I was talking to a friend of mine was talking to me about that earlier today. Going to some of these sessions and feeling like I'm the only one that's struggling with this. I'm the only one that feels differently. I don't dare to say anything. And I'm really, you know, I'm seriously wanting to understand some of these issues, but it seems like everybody else has it all figured out.
And that there's a right answer.
And so even in a place like this that is so open to discussion and seeking and searching, there's still that feeling of being
almost
excluded, of being...
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty politically correct.
That's a question then, because I think... And I've been thinking about the microcosmic community of Holden as I've been thinking about our congregations. And what could we really do to be really open? Because it sounds like what you're saying mm-hmm. is that there, the way things are framed, there are even topics that belong inside with the inside insiders. And to talk about evangelism or stewardship is not a hot topic.
That's right.
Among Holdenites. Right?
They continue to be the roots of the congregation.
We still struggle with them.
We still have to operate this facility. We still have to, I mean, we've done no stewardship and a lot of stewardship, and we were saying this morning, everything that, you know, you sit around a table and talk about stewardship and everyone tells you about a program. Did it work? No, but, you know, we tried it.
We tried.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm struggling with this year after year trying to say maybe I can get some inspiration here. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess I do feel that, I have to tell you though, that we were in a class last year when we were here and they were talking about women's rights and how, you know, I'm handing the flag to you, you know, to carry on, and you know, one of the ladies said, I don't want the flag. I don't want to burn my bra, thank you very much. I enjoy what I'm doing. And the fact that you don't have to necessarily believe the same, you know.
And this is what, this is basically what I told my friend, you know. I said, yeah. I think that if you are in conversation with some of these people, you're going to find out they're not quite so sure about
yeah, right.
it all either. Yeah. And that it's okay if you don't agree with them in this place. I found it, yeah. right, for the most mm-hmm. part. That you can be yourself and be true to what you believe and have the conversation.
But I'm looking at, and so it's Mark, the stimulation from, we had several music topics before. We had poetry, we had the visual arts on how they, you know, how they relate to a religious and faith experience, mm-hmm. but nevertheless, some of those things were available as well as politically correct topics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not that I wouldn't, as I say, one is not right and one is not wrong. It's just
what's
a broader
openness.
Perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stand someplace else. And, you know, like they said in the poet, what was the movie? You know?
Dead Poets Society?
Dead Poets Society. He stood up on his desk.
Oh, yes.
In a different yes. perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Let me try something out on you then. A fellow that I've worked with a lot regarding these issues of hospitality, his name is Pat Kieffert, and he often says that a congregation will only go as far as the pastor will let it and the people will take it. But that most congregations work it in the reverse, that the congregation only goes as far as the pastor will take it and the people will let it. That people often in congregations find themselves in simply the permission-giving mode and expecting, I experienced this, especially in our rural congregations, great idea, pastor, you do it. You know, not great idea, pastor, let's do it even, but good one, go for it. If you got the time, you got the idea. What happens to community if the people aren't just permission givers, but are the ones to carry it forward? And if the leadership sits back and says, my job here is to equip you to do that, what would happen? I think there also may be implications for what you're saying in a place like this, too. That Holden will go where Holden villagers take it.
Well, that's why he says it.
yeah, exactly.
It's not fair, and we know of many of the people who go home and say the same thing we do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't tell somebody, it's never going to change.
Yeah.
I wonder if... I know when we signed up, there was no program as yet. It was sort of a, you know, it was...
You just come.
You didn't know what we were signing up for, sort of. And I've enjoyed everything that I've done here. This is my first time here. And you know, I'm interested in the lesbian issues, and I'm interested in... Your Bible study's been wonderful. I've really enjoyed it. But it was sort of a... I didn't know what I was coming to, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's probably there are so many classes on the lesbian, gay issue, that sort of thing, because the people from San Francisco are here from the church
to be here now,
and so
right.
they're using their expertise. You know, get it while you can, mm-hmm. you know, and you get to see their perspective. But if that was offensive to me, or if I didn't want to be involved in that, then if there were a schedule, I could pick a different week.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I could pick the week that had the poetry or the music or the things that I was coming for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, because I don't know the problems that Holden has in scheduling ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder if
there are certain weeks every year that have a special emphasis. Mm-hmm. And all the times I've been here, it's always a different experience, and it's always the same experience at the same time. If that makes any sense at all.
It does. Explain that. What do you mean by that?
But last year we happened to be here, and we didn't plan it. We happened to be here for almost 2 weeks, and one of them fell the entire deaf and hard of hearing week. And my, you know, my children just thought that was the neatest thing they'd ever done. I did too. It was wonderful. But you're immersed in the whole experience that week. That's the experience you're immersed in. If you happen to come during Gay and Lesbian Awareness Week, you're kind of immersed in those issues. And I think a lot of those weeks are chosen quite far or the same every year. So there's got to be some kind of schedule to.
Last week was Deaf and Hearing Impaired Week here.
And see, that's the same week it was last year, so that makes me feel good.
There's a rhythm.
Some weeks, because it was right before Jubilee.
I'd like to say something about the notion about feeling like maybe if you have, you're sensing that maybe you're a minority view and can't say something. I think Holden... And I'm hoping that this ties in also with what you're suggesting here. I think Holden values itself and is valuable because it is a place where people can freely express ideas where they can't elsewhere. And in some ways, for instance, the gay issue is a topic that is welcome to be spoken about here. But in any situation, it's so hard to keep the pendulum in the middle. It's so easy for there to be a tyranny on the left just as much as there's sometimes a tyranny on the right. And how do you create a community? I'm trying to be affirming here of Holden as an opportunity, a place where you can exchange ideas and be stimulated and say you're saying, what happens where, how does it happen where all of a sudden you feel like, I better not say something because I'm clearly not in the right camp. How does that happen, and how can we avoid it from happening?
And can we use Holden as a case study for
That's what I'm saying.
Own communities of faith.
It is different, though. You know, I mean, I said I'd come for a long time, and I didn't come for a while. Last time I came before last year was 82. And I'd just come off of active duty in the Coast Guard. We successfully escorted the Trident submarine into its base. And there were huge amounts of John Nelson, who's a Lutheran pastor, had gotten arrested as his mother. But I thought it was successful because these folks had all got to be in the paper and say how bad nuclear weapons were, et cetera. And they had their say, and yet we made sure it all done safely. Nobody got hurt.
He was in the Coast Guard.
And I came up here feeling really pumped up about how great this had all worked, our society worked together, et cetera. And I talked to a lot of people, and I got nothing but grief from having had the idea that was that, you know, you should have military or whatever else. I mean, the only way to do it beat your sword into plowshares, et cetera. And I mean, like a lot of other people that have been in the military, felt that it was important to stamp out communism, but one way of doing it was through strength as opposed to simply pacifism, and it, lo and behold, that worked. But it was interesting that I didn't come up here for a few years, not because I didn't feel, I mean, I tried to talk to people about it, and I thought there were two ways of looking at it, but it was like, you know, yeah, there are two ways of looking at it, and your way is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to other people that are conservative, and this one guy said, yeah, you know, it's interesting about people that are very liberal. They absolutely demand the right to say their point of view, but when you give you your point of view, they say, well, but that's wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, that's obviously way overstated. That was his perspective, but it's an interesting.
Well, it's obviously not a perfect community.
No. Nor is it where we live. Or our church, that community.
Why don't we do a quick closing here, and then let's continue this conversation as you choose. Let's pray about this. Dear God, here we sit, for this day in this community, surrounded by your beauty as well as your grace. Guide us forward, Lord. Help us to really radically believe that this is your work that we are a part of in our communities. And help us to find the ways that each of our lights can not only shine, but allow the lights of those around us to shine as well. Amen.